Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. Hey, this is Dr. Gray, and I want to interrupt this podcast because I am thrilled to announce that my book, The Pre-Med Playbook, Guide to the Medical School Interview, is hitting bookshelves on June 6th, 2017, and I'm giving away a copy to 50 lucky winners. Also, if you pre-order a copy today from Barnes & Noble and submit your receipt to me, I will give you lifetime access to our 13-part video series on the medical school interview and 1 month access to our brand new amazing mock interview platform, starting whenever you want. That's almost $100 worth of our products for pre-ordering the paperback book from Barnes & Noble. Text the word pre-order to 44222. Again, pre-order to 44222, and I'll give you instructions on how to enter the contest and how to submit your receipt. The Pre-Med Year, session number 225. Hello and welcome to the two-time Academy Award-nominated podcast, The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your pre-med success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Med Years. I'm glad you have taken some time out of your day to listen to this podcast today. This is going to be an important one to answer your questions about osteopathic medicine. I had the great pleasure of interviewing the junior national director of PreSoma, Rachel, and she shares with us her story and also a lot of the common questions that she gets about being an osteopathic medical student, about being a pre-med interested in osteopathic medicine, and so much more. Let's go ahead and dive right in. Rachel, welcome to the pre-med year. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
When did you know you wanted to be a doctor?
Well, that's a loaded question. I've been getting it a lot recently from the pre-med students that I've interacted with over this past year. I guess it's pretty stereotypical in the fact that when I was around fifth or sixth grade, I started realizing that I liked the sciences that I was learning in school. And the first thing that came to mind is, oh, you're good at science, is that you can be a doctor. You know, that was very naive of me when I was younger, but that's when the idea first entered my mind. And I didn't have any doctors in the immediate family. My parents aren't doctors. Grandparents aren't doctors. So I didn't really know what it was like. We have some family friends who were doctors, but didn't really know about much of what they did and what their day-to-day was like. But it was just an idea that popped into my mind. So when I you know, got older and went into middle school, I focused on more science type of electives and was having a lot of fun. Again, to me, science equaled medicine in medical school, and not necessarily, you know, being a scientist or being a researcher or even being a nurse or a physical therapist for that matter. To me, it was always equivalent.
Why do you think that is? Because I think that's for most people. It's like, oh, science equals doctor.
Right. I mean, I don't know why. I think just from the limited exposure that I had to medicine at that point in my life, that was really the only thing that I could equate it to at that time. You know, I was young at the time. I didn't necessarily know whether or not I was more of a leader or I wanted to be more in control of my day-to-day, as many physicians are. It was just the automatic equivalence to me that I really can't point out specifically. I don't know if it stuck out for you in your mind as to when that happened, you know, science equals medicine and
Didn't for me. It was a totally different path for me, but that always seems to be the common theme from people. It's, oh, science doctor, yeah. Science doctor. There's this, and I don't know if maybe because just as we grow up and we interact with doctors, and there are these cool people in white coats that give us antibiotics when we have ear infections and everything else.
Right.
So there's this mystique about them. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think that definitely hits, you know, the nail on the head. There is this sort of mystique about it, this sort of authority that you strive to be and have one day as a professional. You know, when I grow up, I want to have such authority. And I just really didn't know much else about it. And I think that's kind of what kept me focused on wanting to achieve it, is that when I was young, I didn't have anyone to talk me out of it, per se. I had parents who, luckily, very, very, very supportive since day one when I said I wanted to be a doctor. And, you know, I went through middle school thinking that's what I wanted to do. And then I actually had a pretty unique experience in high school. Growing up along the Jersey Shore, the school system I was in the county schools, they had specialized public high schools that you could be tested into, you know, for lack of a better word, gifted and talented public schools. And I found out about a medical sciences high school, and I applied and I got in, and I was so, so, so excited. And, you know, from that day forward, again, it was medicine, medicine, medicine in high school, doctor, doctor, doctor in high school. We had very limited exposure, actually, to nursing, to physical therapy, to dentistry, to occupational therapy, to becoming a medical research scientist. It was even in high school, we had the unique opportunity to learn about what it is to become a physician, starting from rotations in the local hospital. During our sophomore year, we got to follow around nursing staff and make beds, to taking on double the science course load as a high school student, you know, taking a lot of AP courses in science and math. And we even had the lucky opportunity during our senior year of high school we were so excited to be able to leave high school early for the day to complete some sort of internship and actually follow a doctor around and shadow a doctor around for half of our senior year of high school. And I got to do it with a plastic surgeon, and it was so much fun. And by that point, as a senior in high school, again, I was like, this is what I want to do.
What was it about shadowing and having those experiences that kind of reaffirmed in your mind that this early decision of, ooh, science doctor is now like materializing into something real?
Right. Again, it was so cool to see the person in the white coat having such influence, over a person's health and a person's life and the decisions that they make, for their health and for their future. And what was even cooler about this doctor is that it was a woman. It was a female plastic surgeon. And I'm sure you've had discussions with other people on the podcast here about, how tough it is to as a woman, consider a surgical subspecialty as a career. So she was just a great influence and so inspirational that if she can do it and have four kids and raise a family and be able to have such a profound impact on people's lives, then I can do it too. So she was a great mentor in that way for me. Additionally, at the same time, actually, I was also working for a family friend. It was the closest doctor I knew to me at the time, a hematologist oncologist, and he offered me work in his office just for filing. At that time, it was just paper charts everywhere. Very busy office. So I was basically in charge of making sure all the charts were filed and put away. And I was answering phones. And, it's definitely a different specialty from the plastic surgeon and the kind of patients that they treated for the most part. So being able to see cancer patients treated as well just reaffirmed that I wanted to have this sort of influence in other people's lives.
Nice.
So kind of generic, but yeah. It's just I was really profoundly influenced and in awe by these people. So they were very motivating in terms of being able to achieve my career and pursue my career choice.
Yeah. So sounds like very standard kind of exposure and
yes.
Falling in love with medicine.
Yeah.
You went to it sounds like a great high school that exposed you to this. Did you go straight into college and straight through with no problems, no hiccups, and said, this is easy, I got this? Or were there obstacles along the way?
Right. So that's where my story becomes a little bit less bread and butter, a little bit less generic. I got into a decent college. I got into NYU. That's where I wanted to go. I thought it'd be all smooth sailing from there. I was like, all right, I'll declare a really science type of major. I started out with biology, of course. Like, can that get any more generic? And it took one semester of college, being 18 years old, living in the heart of downtown Manhattan, and very quickly figuring out that I had no idea what I was doing.
In terms of what?
In terms of not knowing what I was doing, I didn't know how to be in control of my studies. I didn't know how to handle the vigorous pre-med curriculum well. I didn't know how to study and stand out in a group of over 800 pre-med students because that's how big my classes were at NYU. I remember my general chemistry lecture was like 850 students, and our lecture was in the Performing Arts Center at NYU. And we all had to take out our clickers for attendance. And I just didn't know how to stand out and make myself shine and really form an application that would be impressive and acceptable enough to enter medical school. After a year of just taking, the biology and the pre-med coursework, I wasn't completely happy with how college was going. And I ended up having a very close friend in college tell me that she was pre-med and wanted to go to medical school, but she actually was studying nutrition and food studies at NYU. And she loved the program so much, she felt like she was learning a lot of the basic science coursework that could help her in medical school. And she was also learning a lot about diet and, foods that may help certain health conditions. And she was on track, just in case, if medical school didn't work out, on becoming a registered dietitian. And she actually, it didn't take much convincing from her to have me switch over to a nutrition and food studies major. And I did keep the pre-med coursework as well while I was at NYU. The pre-med coursework remained, for some reason for me, very difficult to stay afloat in. I think I needed more one-on-one attention from my professors, which is really hard to do, you know, studying in a massive sea of pre-med students there. I didn't really know where to start in terms of volunteering and extracurriculars that not only I would enjoy, but would also look good on my med school application.
Let me stop you there for a second. You're at NYU, not a small liberal arts school in the middle of nowhere. I'm assuming they had or have pre-health offices and advisors. Was it something where you didn't know the questions to ask and who to ask them to, or did you not get the support that you needed?
It was kind of a combination of both, I'd say. I think the university itself was so large, and there was so much correspondence being sent out and so many emails being sent out and, you know, hearing different views from different people. I didn't even know how to access the pre-med, the pre-health office and their services, probably for a good 2 years of college. And I also didn't feel like they really, when I was there, that they were giving me the support that I needed. I think I needed a little bit of handholding in the beginning. And they were just very grade-centric, grade-focused. They're like, well, you're not getting A's in your pre-med classes. We do not encourage you to apply to med school. And if you do, we can't really help you because your grades aren't great.
That's the nasty little trick that pre-health advising offices won't tell you is that because in their mind you didn't meet the qualifications, they don't want to help you because then they can leave you off of their stats and say,
exactly,
look, we have a 98% acceptance rate to medical school. It doesn't include all these other people that we denied that had a 3.5 and we didn't think they were going to get in.
Right, exactly. And yeah, I had no idea that's how they work there. So the few times I was there, I left so discouraged. I did not want to give up my major. I did not want to give up my dream of applying to medical school. But I wish that I had someone in that office there tell me, well, if you can't do it this way because your grades are like this, then let's think of another way that we can do this and can make
no,
this work for you.
There's only one
God
way.
God forbid they do that. God forbid they actually, you know, do their job a little bit more. So it took until like the end of med school when I did start picking up the books to study for the MCAT. Like you asked, did you go straight through? I did not. It took me like till the end of my junior year, beginning of senior year to realize, through a mentor. I met with a mentor that I did see outside of NYU, for tutoring, for mentorship, that I decided it would be wise to focus on what was weak on my med school application and take 1 to 2 years to strengthen those weaknesses. And that's exactly what I did. So I took 2 years off before getting into medical school.
How did you determine what was weak in your application?
So this guy took the time with me to lay everything out on the table. At that point, you know, we went over grades. We went over GPA. I did get in a bunch of extracurriculars. I did get some really good volunteering and job opportunities. I actually did end up working for money throughout all 4 years of med school in some sort of medical related field. I did do research in New York City, and then I also ended up working for the Department of Health of New York City, which was amazing. I had a great time, but I also learned I didn't want to do public health at the end of it. So we laid out everything of my application. You know, if we took a snapshot today, what your application looks like, what can we pinpoint that can be better? And for me, it was, and before that point, I had not taken my MCAT. It was everything up until that point before the MCAT. And we saw that my nutrition grades were excellent. I love studying nutrition and food studies. I had a 3.8, 3.9 nutrition GPA. You know, I would have gotten into any dietetic internship that I wanted to if I wanted to become a dietitian. But it was my pre-med science GPA that was not good at all. It was like a 2.7, which was embarrassing. I didn't even realize that because when you get your GPA calculated online through your transcript, it's just, you know, your pre-med and your nutrition grades compiled together. So we took them apart and figured out what my pre-med science GPA was. And it was a 2.7. He said, this is what we need to fix. This is what you need to focus on over the next 1 to 2 years before you submit your applications. And that's exactly what I did.
So did you take post-bac classes?
Yeah, I asked him first, and I get these questions a lot, you know, from the pre-meds that I speak to. I asked him first, well, can I do some sort of master's program? You know, I'm in New York City. There's so many great master's programs. I can go to Columbia. A lot of my NYU friends went to Columbia and other great schools for master's programs. He said, kid, Rachel, it's your undergrad grades that need improving. Why would you take grad classes if you need to fix that undergrad GPA box on your application? So instead, we decided that instead of enrolling in an official post-bac program, since at that point I really had completed all of my, you know, general pre-med sciences, we decided that I would enroll in a local university that has a good reputation and just register for a buttload of science courses. So I applied to Rutgers University, being from New Jersey, be in-state, much cheaper tuition, and I got accepted 3 days later, which was very exciting.
Nice.
And I started building my course load, and I started registering for as many biology classes as possible, you know, including cell and molecular biology, embryology. I decided to retake physics because my grades at NYU weren't stellar. And that's where I started.
Okay.
I did get some, you know, for people who are listening, I did get some pushback from Rutgers. I was registering for a lot of 400 level biology courses. And they're like, you know, Rachel, you don't have the prerequisites. We understand that you graduated college, but you don't have the prerequisites to be taking such high-level science courses. So I went back to my mentor and I said to him, like, what do I do? He said, go into their office and state your case to them and tell them that you will not let them down and you will ace those courses. So I went in. I met with the head of the biology department at Rutgers University. I said, I will not let you down. Please let me into these courses. And that's what he did.
Nice.
And I took 60 credits of coursework that year, between two summer sessions, fall and spring. And I finished with a 3.99999. It was very close to a 4.0. And at that same time, one of the professors took a liking to me, and he let me into his molecular biology lab, and I did bench research while I was there too.
Nice.
So yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah. So you are in medical school now as an osteopathic student. You were able to take advantage of this little known thing called grade replacement that the ACOMAS application used to have. And now it doesn't. I'm interested to know your thoughts. Like, why? So you were able to take advantage of that, and it helped you get into a school. Do you know your pre-grade replacement grade and your post-grade replacement grade?
I'm actually not familiar with that grade replacement term. So I'm not sure if my grades were replaced or they were actually just built in and, you know, blended in on top of what I had already had.
Yeah.
But I know that before I took all those classes, I had around a 2.7. And in the end, I had around a 3.5, 3.6 science GPA.
Yeah. Yeah. So grade replacement for those listening that don't know, and for you. So on the ACOMAS application, when you applied to DO schools, any classes that you repeated, you didn't put any credit hours in for the old class. And then the new class, you put credit hours in the grade that you got. And so that was counted towards your GPA. And it's a new policy change for the 2017 application cycle for 2018 acceptance, is that they're no longer doing it. They're doing it the way that the MD application works, where all the grades are counted and they're just all averaged together. So big change, unfortunately, for those that are in the process of going to a post-bac and all of a sudden are told, guess what? Your post-bac classes are no longer going to replace your old ones. They're just going to be average. So,
yeah, it does make it harder. It can make it exponentially harder. I realize how hard, after completing a whole degree, how much harder it would take to build up that GPA. So,
what would you have done differently, knowing what you know now, going to NYU? Would you still have gone to NYU knowing that you wanted to be pre-med? Was it just too hard of a pre-med school, or would you have just not done the biology major and surrounded yourself with all these pre-med students?
Right. I think first, my first thought was, oh, I should not have gone to NYU. You know, I have a lot of friends who, since I did go to this pre-med high school, right, a lot of my friends who I went to high school with ended up at, you know, the state university like Rutgers, and they were able to be rock stars in programs like that and go straight through to medical school. So that was my initial regretful feelings, like, oh, you know, I should have done what they did. I should have just stayed in state, you know, experienced college differently, you know, in a big campus school, and have gone straight through. But it, you know, almost entering my fourth year in medical school, it's unbelievable to think how fast it's going by. I realized that being in NYU in New York City, honestly, was such a unique experience for me. I was able to grow up in a way differently than some of my colleagues had, you know, being, for lack of a better word, sheltered on campus schools, that I really don't regret having that experience being in New York, being in a large school in New York City. But like you mentioned, I kind of wish, you know, that I knew that it's okay to take time off. It's okay to take a few extra years before applying and going to medical school. That if I were to do it all over again, you know, I probably would have enjoyed myself studying nutrition and food studies, or some sort of, you know, other non-traditional type of major at a place like NYU. And then I would have probably done a post-bac program separately after I graduated, so that I can really feel like I was at my greatest maturity level and had the greatest level of focus to, you know, make my application as good as possible.
Okay. Interesting. So again, you're an osteopathic student now, and you kind of are a big shot in the pre-student osteopathic medical association world. What is your role in that organization?
Yeah, so PreSOMA, the Pre-Student Osteopathic Medical Association, is actually the undergrad division of an even larger association. It's the Student Osteopathic Medical Association, which is the osteopathic medical students portal to the greater osteopathic community. And what a lot of even osteopathic medical students don't realize is that we're the direct student voice to the American Osteopathic Association. So SOMA, for medical students, gets the students' voices heard on issues that affect them both in school and for their future careers as physicians. So naturally, an organization like SOMA is going to want to be able to mentor and nurture those who are interested in applying to osteopathic medical schools. So SOMA and pre-SOMA are nationally led by and solely by osteopathic medical students. So it's pretty busy. You know, we spend the day, you know, rotating through the hospital or sitting through class. And then when we get home, we volunteer our time to devote our energy and grow the organization. So pre-SOMA currently has 1,200 pre-med members, many of which are part of 30 active chapters at universities nationwide. And National Pre-SOMA works hard to promote osteopathic medical profession, increase the number of applicants to osteopathic medical schools, and support the growth of aspiring osteopathic physicians at all levels of education. And we've had high school students reach out to us. We've even had professionals in their 30s and 40s looking for a change in their career. And we are here to help guide people who are interested in applying to medical school, help guide them into successfully applying and getting in.
That's awesome. So for you listening, pre-SOMA would be the equivalent of the pre-med AMSA.
Correct.
The allopathic mm-hmm. world.
Correct.
All right. So in your role, I'm assuming you get a ton of questions about osteopathic medicine, and I'm sure you're answering the same questions over and over and over again. So for this podcast, so we can answer the question
yes.
once and just point people to this podcast, what do you think is the biggest misconception that students have when they reach when they're reaching out to you and ask questions about osteopathic medicine?
I think the biggest misconception, I'm sure you have heard this before, you know, from other osteopathic students and physicians, is that this was plan B for us. Mm-hmm. And that, okay, well, just in case I don't get into an allopathic program, I'll apply DO. And if I get in, we'll see what happens, because it's still better than having to go out of the country for medical school. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I'm generalizing, but that's yep. a question I've asked recently while meeting with med students, pre-med students who are interested in applying to medical school. That being said, I am so excited to hear from pre-med students that they are specifically applying to osteopathic medical school because of the philosophy that it encompasses, rather than it just being a plan B.
Yeah.
For me, it wasn't a plan B. It was just, I'm going to apply to as many medical schools as possible so that I could, you know, increase my chances of getting in.
Yeah.
And for me, osteopathic medical schools, those were the first schools that accepted me, so I knew they wanted me more than allopathic programs. That being said, people don't realize that the people who still think that it's plan B, they're not enlightened to the philosophy that osteopathic medicine really encompasses, and that's why we're here to educate them and enlighten them and teach them as to why becoming a DO isn't plan B. It's a very special and exciting plan that they should really consider being part of.
Yeah. I think your original discussion about plan B, it used to be the philosophy, and if you go on certain student physician forums, that it still is. Like, oh, your grades aren't good enough. Apply to a DO school. And it's funny, because when you actually run the numbers, statistically, it's harder to get into a DO school these days than an MD school. So I think more and more people are doing exactly what you did, that they're just increasing their odds and putting DO schools on the same level as MD schools and just saying, you know what, I want to be a physician, period. It doesn't matter what the letters are after my name, so I'm going to apply everywhere.
Right. And I do have to add something, which is just, it comes full circle. I didn't even realize when I was young that the hematologist oncologist I was working for is a DO.
Oh, nice.
I didn't even realize that he's a DO.
Yep.
And he was in the first graduating class of my school, actually. So he was so excited to find out, you know, that not only was I going to osteopathic medical school, I was going to his school. So just funny how things do come full circle. Yeah. And everything happens for a reason. So in terms of casting a wide net, applying to both DO and MD programs, really increasing your chances of becoming a physician, period. I'm a true believer in that everything happens for a reason. So I'm a true believer. I was meant to become a DO and to really embrace the philosophy that it encompasses.
Yeah, awesome. What is the biggest challenge for pre-med students that are interested in osteopathic medicine? What do you think is the biggest challenge for them to apply to DO programs without having much DO experience?
Yeah, that's a really good question. If you were to scour my pre-soma email inbox right now, I would say the most emails that come in from with questions from pre-med students is, how do I shadow a DO? Because right now, DOs encompass only 1 in 4 to 1 in 5 practicing physicians in the country. And they do tend to be more geographically centered in some areas versus others. So, you know, me being from the Northeast, there's a lot of osteopathic physicians here, same for other corners of the country as well. Since pre-soma is run only by 2 osteopathic medical students, me and someone else who's a 4th year about to graduate, time is extremely limited for us to make a quote-unquote master list of DOs to shadow across the country, because there's actually a lot more practicing DOs than you think. I think we just hit 100,000 DOs in this country, which is awesome. I got an email from the AOA a few months ago actually saying that. And the answer that I usually have for these students is to go on to the AOA website, the American Osteopathic Association website. It's a really invaluable resource because they have the listings of all of the osteopathic state associations and where there's contact info listed for each state. So for example, coming from New Jersey and working closely with members of my state association, I know that these associations would be thrilled. They would be so excited to hear from these pre-med students and would most certainly give out the contact information of its active members who are willing to take students to come into shadow. And a lot of the time these students follow up saying, well, what if they say no, you can't shadow? Well, what do I do next? I really want to shadow a DO before I apply to med school. And the answer that I give to these students are often beyond the lines of osteopathic versus allopathic medicine. You know, I tell them to remain persistent and polite and to keep contacting these physicians in their offices. Contact them in another way, like showing up to their office and handing, you know, your resume to their secretary. I've done this several times throughout my academic career. I continue to do it, you know, considering I'm going to be applying to residency soon. And in my experience, it's definitely opened up, you know, doors for me and really hasn't closed any if you're polite about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think as pre-med students, as anybody, we're always skittish to cold call somebody. And the fear of rejection is huge. And usually the response is no response. And I always tell students, like, unless they tell you no, they're not telling you no. So you need to keep asking.
It's so true. Yeah. I mean, and then another question that I do get is, you know, because of geography of where DOs tend to have historically practiced, even though that's changing now because we continue to open up more and more osteopathic medical schools, the next question I get from them is, well, what if there are no DOs to shadow where I live? And that's understandable, but that's when I urge the pre-med students to become a pre-soma member so that they can, you know, be open to events and activities that are going on in their area. So those are the general questions that I get.
Okay, I want to ask a little bit more about pre-soma in 1 minute, but I have another question.
Sure.
That just popped up in my mind. One of the big things I think in my mind that separates osteopathic physicians from allopathic physicians is OMT, like the kind of thing that defines you almost.
Yes.
But not every DO practices OMT. Do you think it's important for a pre-med student to shadow a DO specifically to watch OMT?
I personally do not think that they have to, you know, specifically watch someone doing OMT. They can watch YouTube videos on that. they can take an online course on it if they want to. You know, if I can go into a little story, looking back on the hematologist-oncologist that's a DO, he never did OMT on his patients. Yeah. And he probably could have, you know, especially in trying to comfort, you know, cancer patients who are in chronic pain and had other problems. But I think being a DO is beyond the actual practice of using your hands for manipulation, and it's more about living by the tenets of osteopathic medicine and the philosophy behind it, and that osteopathic physicians are trained to consider the body as a whole first. And if I reflect upon my experiences with that doctor, the oncologist, even though he didn't necessarily practice OMT, the manipulation therapy, with his hands, he still practiced his medicine in an osteopathic way, in that he really took time to consider the patient as a whole, you know, about their social life, about what's going on at work, about what's going on at home, the way that he physically embraced patients and made them feel comfortable by giving them hugs or honoring their space when they desired it. So I don't think a pre-med student needs to necessarily see OMT done in terms of, you know, being able to crack necks and do muscle energy and to do cranial manipulation, but rather just see the more holistic type of approach that they give towards their patients. So, okay. No, I don't think they need to.
All right. Good answer. All right. Back to Presoma. You mentioned that there are 30 chapters in the nation. I find that inadequate. If somebody listening is at a school that doesn't have a Presoma chapter and wants to start one, what does that process look like?
That's a really good question. And I completely, wholeheartedly agree with you in that 30 chapters is inadequate. We actually do have a lot more chapters, but they have not been active for the past couple years. So, you know, we kind of take them off of that active list. That being said, the easiest thing that these students can do who may be interested in starting a chapter, being able to see if their school already has a chapter that might be inactive, is that they go onto our website. They go onto studentdo.org/presoma. And, you know, they click around and there's a tab there, start a chapter, and the directions are pretty self-explanatory. They can also shoot us an email, presoma@studentdo.org, with the same question, be like, hey, Rachel, what's up? I heard you on that podcast. I'm interested in starting a chapter. Could you let me know if my school already has one? And we're more than, you know, able to help them out with that way. In fact, another way for them to get involved is I actually have pre-med students helping me with those kinds of tasks. So I have someone in charge of my database, keeping track of all the new members and chapters. And he's a pre-med student applying to med school now. So every year we kind of turn over that committee, those pre-med students who help us in that respect. So just contact us, email us. We respond back really quickly. We're so excited to hear from you.
Yeah. And if you're applying to an osteopathic medical school and you have a leadership position in your extracurriculars about starting a Presoma chapter at your school, I mean, it obviously shows that you're interested in osteopathic medicine.
Yep.
What do you think is the, I guess let me ask more generally, not osteopathic, not allopathic. And what do you think is the hardest thing these days for pre-med students?
The hardest thing for pre-med students? It's funny. I think the hardest thing for pre-med students still remains one of the hardest things for being a med student too. And it's something that I still experience to this day, is being able to process all the information and advice that people give you and what the right thing to do is and when you need to decide for yourself what the right thing or action to do is. You know, you can have a lot of friends who are already in med school and be like, well, I did X, Y, and Z, so you should do X, Y, and Z.
That's why this podcast exists, because
exactly.
I don't just listen to one person, or I don't just tell my story and say, this is how I got into school. I talk to lots of people.
You know, I think that's the hardest thing, or hearing from people, well, my GPA was a lot higher than yours, so that's why I got in. Or my GPA is a lot higher than yours, so I am going to get in. And that's so not true. You know, it's really hard to get lost in all the information and quote unquote, you know, advice that people give you. There needs to be a certain point, and it's really, really hard, where you need to gain the confidence and say, well, this is me, this is what I'm going to do. And this is how I'm going to present myself. I'm going to take, you know, X, Y, and Z information from A, B, and C and take it for what it is, see how I can apply it. But I need to be confident in myself and in my application, because if you're lucky enough to get to interview day at a medical school, they'll see right through you if you're not confident enough. Or, you know, they may ask you, well, why was your GPA kind of low? Well, what's your answer going to be to that? You know, my friends, they told me it was okay, or they told me it wasn't okay. I know it's not that good, but look where I am. No, you need to be confident in your answers and say, you know, well, look at all the other good things that I've done, you know, to bring you to the table today. I really do think that's the hardest thing, is, you know, being confident and being able to process the information and advice that's given to you, but don't drown in it.
So, Rachel, you talked about, or we talked about, getting involved as a chapter. If somebody wants to start a chapter, how else can a pre-med student out there start to get involved in the osteopathic world if they don't want to start a chapter?
Yes, yeah, so, sure. So starting a chapter is one of the ways you can become involved in pre-soma, but also there are other ways to get involved and to meet with osteopathic medical students and physicians all over the country. I'll guide you guys to the pre-soma website. It's studentdo.org/pre-soma. And on there, you are able to join. Our membership is free. And we have a few events that occur every year that are really, really exciting for you guys. This past fall, we had National Osteopathic Night Out, where we had 70 locations across the country where pre-meds met med students over a cup of coffee to ask them anything and everything about osteopathic medical school. We have coming up in April, National Shadow Week, S-H-A-D-O Week. You see what I did there? where we have participating colleges of osteopathic medicine across the country opening up their doors to pre-med students and to live a day in the life of a med student, from attending lecture to participating in OMT lab and even meeting with admissions directors at their schools. And then also we have coming up early April is DO Day on Capitol Hill, where med students, osteopathic physicians, anyone and everyone who represents the osteopathic medical community goes to Washington, D.C. and meets with their congressmen and senators and discusses issues pertaining to the osteopathic medical community. We do have two scholarships for pre-med students up for an open for this event in early April. That will be up on the website soon to apply to. And then lastly, every year there's the big DO conference. It's called OMED, that hosts thousands of osteopathic physicians, medical students, and pre-med students. So there's a conference for everyone there. So this past year in Anaheim, we had around 65 pre-med students come, and they had a blast and were able to rub shoulders with doctors and med students.
All right. Again, that was Rachel, the Junior National Pre-Soma Director, sharing her story and hopefully answering a lot of your questions that you have if you are interested in being an osteopathic physician. Remember, DO versus MD, there really is no difference. A lot of the biases out there are pre-med biases. Yes, there are still probably some biases among some elite residencies, but outside of that, go be whatever you want to be. If you are interested in osteopathic medicine, great. If you just want to be a doctor and don't care about what's after your name, great. Go apply everywhere. But know at the end of the day that no matter what's after your name, you're there to take care of patients. And if that means using some osteopathic manipulative therapies, great. If that means treating a head cold with some medications, great. DOs and MDs can do that. Obviously, MDs can't really do the manipulation part. That is special for osteopathic physicians, but it's definitely something to think about. At the end of the day, MD or DO, you're taking care of patients. So with that said, I hope you got a lot of great information out of the podcast today. I want to take a second and thank a few people that have left us ratings and reviews. We have one from Daniel here who says to Allison and Ryan Gray, I couldn't express how grateful I am to have stumbled upon this podcast 4 years ago. Wow. Since the beginning, which was known as the Medical School HQ podcast, your mission to inform, educate, and inspire has resonated with aspiring physicians around the world. So thank you both so much. That's awesome, Daniel. Thank you for that review. And I'm glad we could be here to help spread that word. We have another one here from Kane Med. This is actually Kane. He was on the podcast a while ago, and I got to meet him at UCF when I was there for a medical school admissions symposium. I got to go out to dinner with about 15 pre-med students and Kane, and I helped Kane prepare for his interviews, and he was ultimately accepted at the University of Central Florida, going to medical school there now. And he said, this is the path to medical school. Just like it's never too late to become a pre-med, it's never too late to start using the Pre-Med Years podcast to guide you on your way to medical school, unless you already are accepted. In that case, congratulations. Ryan has produced an invaluable resource that will help you stand out from the sea of medical school applications. This is a must listen. And it helped me earn a medical school acceptance. Thank you, Kane, for that review. All right. If you would like to leave a rating and review, I would love one. medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes. What I would love even more is your willingness to share this podcast with somebody else. Remember, we preach here collaboration, not competition. And so sharing this podcast with a friend isn't giving away all the secrets. You are competing against yourself. So I would love for you to share this podcast with your neighbors, with your advisors, with your classmates, whoever it may be that you think would be interested in learning about the path to medical school and helping, having me help them on their path to medical school. So do that. I would love it. Have a great week. Don't forget to check out all the other podcasts that we offer at MedEd Media. You can check out everything at mededmedia.com.